Turn to the book of Esther. Esther chapter 4. Esther's a great book. I assume all of you have read it. I hope you have. If not, you should. You should start in Genesis and read right up to it and then read right on past it. But Esther's really a great book. I mean, there's been a lot of debate over centuries about whether or not it's inspired. You know, you don't have God mentioned in it not one time, so that kind of makes it kind of a strange book. That alone makes it kind of odd. You read through it and no one mentions God. There's not a prayer to God. There's not a reference to God. Nothing. It's just like if he doesn't even exist in the book. And so that makes it very strange to be in the Bible, you know, a book that doesn't even talk about God. And yet it's one of the books where God is most evident in the Bible. I mean, his hand, his plans, his divine providence, it's just every page, God is the main character of the book of Esther. And it's a really great book. And this is a book of, you know, of poetic justice, which I think most Americans just love. I know I do. I mean, I think it's great. You get this Haman fella, and he hates Mordecai, and then, you know, the king calls Haman in and tells him, hey, what should I do to honor the man that I want to honor? What should I do? And Haman, like most of us, naturally thinks he's talking about himself. And so, you know, he devises this as an elaborate thing. You know, get someone really important to walk them through the streets on your horse with your robes and your crown, and then say, you know, this is how the king honors. And so he says, that's a good idea. Why don't you go do that to Mordecai? You know, and that's just great. I mean, you read that, you think, wow, I wish that would happen to me more often. You know, once in a while that would happen. And then, you know, Mordecai, he goes and makes himself a big noose, and he's got this plan, he's going to kill all the Jews, and he's personally going to kill Mordecai. So he makes this huge scaffold with this big noose, and he's going to hang him. And then, you know, he ends up getting hanged on his own noose. Just poetic justice. It really is great. I remember one time, a long time ago, when we lived here for a while, my dad was working. Well, I got a bunch of extra wood from the project where we were working. I was, I guess, 12 years old. I worked with my dad. And so I got to take home any of the scraps that they put in the dumpster. I could take them home. So I hauled a lot of wood home, made all kinds of stuff, made a big clubhouse out there behind where SeaWorld is now and stuff. And anyways, I got a bunch of 1x4s that they gave me, so I made a bunch of paddles. I don't know if some of you remember those paddles. I mean, I made a bunch of them. I got real ambitious. I made dozens of paddles, and I gave them to all the parents of the church for their kids. That's why a lot of kids don't like me here. Anyways, at that time, me and David, we didn't really get along too well. So I made this big paddle. I mean, I made a big one, and I was going to give it to Eddie. Well, my dad sees the big paddle, and he says, wow, now that's a good paddle. I want that one. So just be real careful who you make a noose for, because sometimes, you know, anyway. So yeah, Esther's a great book. I mean, it really is a good book. But there's a verse here that I would like for us to read. We're going to read a couple of them to get to it, but it has a question, and it has a thought that has impacted me lately, and I would like for you to look at it. Let's start reading in, we get here in chapter 4, and the whole conspiracy against the Jews has come out. Mordecai's heard about it. He's out, he's ripped up his clothes, he's out there in the dirt, in the dust, he's lamenting over the fact that there is now a death sentence on all the Jews. Esther hears about it. She sends out to Mordecai to find out. Mordecai says, you need to go into the king and you need to intercede for the Jews. And then we're going to pick up and start reading in verse 10 where Esther gives her reply. It says, again, Esther spake unto Hatak and gave him commandment unto Mordecai. All the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces do know that whosoever, whether man or woman, shall come unto the king into the inner court who is not called, there is one law of his to put him to death, except such to whom the king shall hold out the golden scepter, that he may live. But I have not been called to come in unto the king these 30 days. And they told him Mordecai Esther's words. Then Mordecai commanded to Esther, think not with thyself that thou shalt escape the king's house more than all the Jews.
For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and in deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. And who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" This last phrase, "Who knoweth if thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" Like I said, God is the principal character in the book of Esther. I mean, you got all these amazing coincidences come together to put Esther, a Jewish lady, precisely in the right moment and in the right place to deliver her people. I mean, this is just an incredible amount of coincidences that have to come together for this to work out. I don't know if you've ever thought about all the coincidences that have come together in your life to put you in this place right now. I mean, it's incredible the things that have to happen for you to be here, right now. You know, we all have these stories. I'm sure there's dozens of them in this room, or hundreds of them in the room. But you know, I was thinking, I read this verse and I think about one time this. Some person from our church in Querétaro gets in a taxi and gives the taxi driver one of our tracks. And the taxi driver doesn't want it, so the next fare that gets in, he hands it to the fare. The fare doesn't want it, so he takes it home and places it on the table in his house. His brother gets home, picks up the track, and goes to the meeting. He gets saved. He's one of our missionaries out of Querétaro in Pachuca right now. Well, he's been witnessed to for many years by this elderly Baptist lady who works in a bank. Somehow, they got to be friends. And so, he's a young man. He's probably about 18 or 19 at the time. But this elderly lady's been witnessing to him for years. So, she finds out that he tells her, "I got saved, and I'm meeting with these Christians in the park." Well, she wants to make sure that this is a real church. That this isn't, you know, a bunch of wackos. So, anyways, she found out we were a bunch of wackos. Anyway, she goes to the park. But instead of just going alone, she invites this young lady she works with at the bank. So she invites her to come to the meeting that night to go check out this church. Well, that lady shows up and she gets saved that night. A few weeks later, she's driving down the road to San Luis Potosí. And she has a flat tire. And some young man drives along and he gets out to help her. You know, this story goes. Anyways, so you know, so then he gets saved. Now he's the deacon in Querétaro. I mean, these are, you know, you think, wow, look at these things, you know, they just sort of, I'm thinking about, you know, you got this other case in Aguascalientes where you got this man. And he works at the INEGI, which is basically the account, you know, they do the census in Mexico. They do all the census and the maps and all the topography and all that. Anyways, he works. They just moved him from Mexico City when the earthquake happened. They moved out that whole government office. Everything moved out with Calientes. Well, they put him in a provisional office right on the corner of the park where we would meet. Right up in the window. So he went on his break time, which if you work for government offices pretty much every time, he's sitting up in his office window looking down and watching these meetings. Thinking, man, these people are crazy. Well, next thing you know, his wife tells him she finds out his wife has been going to meetings with Christians. And he says, "Well, if you want to see wackos, you want to see crazy people, I'll take you and see the craziest people you've ever seen." And so he takes her to the park where she'd been meeting already for a couple months. I mean, these are all these coincidences that come together. You get this guy in Querétaro, and he finds out his wife has been meeting with us for several years, or for several months, sorry. And she's been doing it. He's been drunk every day. He's drinking every day, drunk every day, and they have a horrible marriage. Well, he finds out she's been meeting with us for a couple months. And so he decides he's going to come and beat up the first preacher he finds for preaching to his wife. So he shows up, and there's a guy there preaching, and he's half drunk, and he's mad, and he wants a fight. When he gets up close, he hears the message, and it's Colossians 3, and it says that wives should submit to your husband. So he says, "You know what? I think I'm going to let him pass this one time. Just this once, I'm going to let it slide. But I'm going to be back next Sunday." He's been coming back next Sunday for 7 years. Hopefully he never gets around to beating him up. And these, you know, these stories just keep, they just continue and continue, and it's all these coincidences in our lives that have brought us to this very moment right now. And it's amazing. And it, you know, at the time it seems like it's all coincidences, and yet it's God's hand behind our lives, moving them and directing them and putting you exactly where He wants you right now. Think of all the times you've been, you should have died, and yet somehow you didn't. I think when me and Terry first got married, and I was really, really stupid back then. I'm less stupid now. You know, my dad always seemed dumb to me for a long time. When I hit about 14 or 15, man, my dad got dumb all of a sudden. And then I think he's taking correspondence courses lately because he's getting smarter and smarter every day. But you know, I was really dumb back then. And I thought, wow, you know what, let's drive all night. We'll be there early in the morning. So we take off, and that was back in the old days, and the old roads, and no toll roads. So we're driving at night, and maybe a lot of you don't know me very well, but you know, I fall asleep real fast. I got like a switch in my head. Makes my wife very mad. I'll lay down, and as soon as my head hits the pillow, boom, I'm out. Out like a light, boom. And so, you know, I'm driving and I'm fine. And we're about, I don't know, maybe an hour from Laredo. We've driven all the way from San Luis. And she asked me, hey, how you doing? I said, I'm doing fine. It's just immediate, boom. And we're going about, and I'm probably going way faster than I should have been. Who knows, maybe about 80. And we're going down this little bitty two-lane road, the Columbia Highway, which is even more narrow than the Laredo Highway was back then. Real little road, and it's built up maybe like 4 or 5 feet off these ditches. And so you got this little road, and it's about 5 feet up, and it's straight down on both sides. And I fall asleep just right after she asked me, and the next thing you know, I wake up, and we're doing donuts down this road at about 70 miles an hour. And we fly off the road, and we land out in the ditch, and the only thing that happened is we had a flat tire. Changed the tire, got back up on the road, and took off. Sure was lucky. What a coincidence. This has happened over and over in our lives. I remember one time we're driving down the very next trip. We said, we're not going down that road no more. Blame the road. That's why tennis players always look at the racket whenever they miss the ball. You know, we're not going down that road no more. So we say, well, let's go out McAllen. So we're going out McAllen, and we got that same little stupid Ford Escort. I hate Ford Escorts. And we got this trailer we're pulling behind it. And my dad says, that road's great. Nice, easy curves. It's not a great road. It's a horrible road. And it's raining, just a drizzle, and it's slippery. And this time I'm driving slow. I'm driving maybe 30 miles an hour. And we just start to slide sideways. And we just start to slide. And we slide up, up, up to the edge of this mountain cliff. And in this entire section, when I got out later to look, there's only one section of guardrail, and it's right there. And we hit that and stopped. And all of us have had these situations. It's God working in your favor to put you here right now. And it happens over and over and over again. And it seems at the moment that there is, it doesn't seem like any big deal sometimes. Sometimes it's just the decision to turn around and walk back in your house instead of across the street where you would have been hit. Sometimes you didn't even notice. And yet God was behind you, and He was watching over you, and He was protecting you to get you here right now in this place. Amen. Who knows? Maybe for such a time as this, you didn't die yesterday. Maybe for such a time as this, God just protected you one moment. Ever felt that you just can't go anywhere in life? All the doors seem to close, and you're angry and you're frustrated. And you feel like you're just banging against the walls, and you think, why is this happening to me? Why don't things work out for me? Why doesn't the doors open for me like they do for other people? And you think, man, I feel like a rat in a maze, and it's just banging each way, and I can't seem to get ahead. And yet it's God saying, don't go that way. You don't understand it right now. You don't like it right now. But I'm stopping you from this way because I know what's on the other end of that path. And you just feel like you're banging around and you can't seem to find a clear path anywhere. And yet, years later, you'll look back, and many of us have, we've looked back and said, wow, if God had let me continue that path, that's where I would be right now. It sure seemed cruel at the moment. But maybe for such a time as now, God just prevented things in your life. He just prevented you from going places. He prevented you from buying certain things or becoming something or marrying a certain person or whatever it is. You know, and we all have these stories and we can look back and say, look at this. Look how this worked out in our lives. Look how we look back and we say, man, what a bunch of coincidences. But if you just have just a little bit of faith, you can see it wasn't coincidence. God was actively involved in your life. One of the greatest verses of the Bible is in Lamentations where Jeremiah says that His mercies are new every morning. It's not that God just says, you know, this blanket promise of mercy, but every single morning, God renews a covenant of mercy with you personally. He personally says, today, I'm going to look out after you. Today, I'm going to watch out for you. Today, I'm giving you mercy. Perhaps for just such a time as this. Maybe for this precise moment. I think about one of the elders in Querétaro. He was from a young man. Something happened. He got very serious back trouble, and he was in the bed. He couldn't get out of bed for years. It was like 2 or 3 years. Young man. For no explainable reasons, the doctors don't know why, but his back just quit working. And he laid in bed for over 2 years. When he finally was able to get up, he had to learn how to walk again. He had already lost his ability to walk. But he lay in bed for 2 years, very angry. And all he had to do, the time he got tired of television, was read the Bible. He's a very devout Catholic, yet he sat there for 2 years and read the Bible. Because he couldn't do anything else but lay in bed and read the Bible. And he started seeing these verses that Mary had other children, that the priest can't forgive sins. And they started working on him. And they started touching him. He started having these questions. And when he finally was, after a couple years of this, and he was able to get out, and somehow, you know, his back all of a sudden was fine. He was able to get up and he learned how to walk again. He had to exercise to get his legs back. But when he's up around, he starts asking priests questions and they don't have answers. And then his family, who is extremely devout Catholic, they ostracize him for asking these questions. And so he just puts the Bible away. He says, too much grief. And like 6 years later, he decides to go downtown, which he never does. They're very private. They never leave. They never leave the house. He decides, you know what? Let's go downtown. Let's just go walk around downtown. And he goes downtown at precisely the 30 minutes of that week that we preach downtown. And he walks up and he hears Brother Marco preaching and he gets saved. Think, how does this happen? Well, it's for such a time as then. His whole life led him to that point. His entire life. How is it that somebody from Michigan who doesn't know anything about evangelism, I mean, never even heard of the idea of missions, ends up in Mexico as a missionary? Well, you see, some crazy nut from Michigan decides to get mad at his family and decides to pack his whole family in a Volkswagen Bug and drive down to Mexico. And when he gets to Saltillo, he's asking the tránsito, the policeman, directions, and since they don't speak English and he doesn't speak Spanish, they direct him to the only person they know that speaks Spanish or English, which is another crazy nut by the name of Dale West. So he drives up to this orphanage that this American missionary runs, and they get to be friends. Well, then when Brother Dale closes the orphanage, they're trying to decide where to go. And they say, well, let's go to Michigan. We know somebody there. Let's just move up there. And so they move up to Michigan, and onto the same block, I think, or the same area as my parent, as my dad. And my family meets basically this church. And my dad goes down to Mexico once he's married my mom, and he sees what's going on, and he sees the need, and he's interested. And he goes back up to Michigan, decides he's going to be a big farmer, so he buys huge farms. And the first 2 or 3 years, drought. First year was drought. No rain, lost his entire crop. The next year, God gave him the rain, and the rain from the year before too, and loses his entire crop. But then God gives him a good year. He can't even finish one row with his combine without filling up the wagon with grain. He has this dust on the side of the tractor where the steel comes down the combine, and he's starting to mark off every row, and every row is, I forget what the figure is, but it's a lot of money. He's already, with just a few rows, just a half a field, he's already paid everything from the years before. Everything else is profit. And he's going down these rows and he's counting off these marks. And he gets about halfway done harvesting this incredible crop. He's already had plans of what he's going to buy, more farms, more tools, hire people. He's going to be a big farmer. And he says that God tells him, almost audibly, just two words. He tells him, so what? So what? You're going to have all this land, you're going to have all this grain, you're going to have all this money, you have all these plans, and so what? So he goes home and he sells a brand new house he just built, we never lived in it, sells off all his machinery, sells off all his land, and we moved to Mexico. Now my dad isn't a great preacher. He's not a great church planner. He'll tell you that himself. He's told me this. He's told me that he moved to Mexico so I would be in Mexico for such a time as now. I look back on my life and I see what God has done to put me exactly where I am now. Orchestrated my entire life so I would be right here, right now, for this one purpose. And God has done that with every one of you. These aren't exceptional stories. This is just my story. And we all have them. And they're all about the same. God has moved in your life to put you right here,
amen,
right now. But this is the catch. When that moment comes, when that event comes that God has prepared you your whole life for, it may be something huge, like Esther, saving an entire race of people. It may be something very small, like witnessing to one small child. But that's the moment. That's the event. That is the thing that God has prepared you for your entire life. At that moment, it becomes your decision. And that's what Mordecai tells Esther. Mordecai says, if you don't do it, it'll come from somewhere else, but you'll die. See, God's plans are much greater than you. God's plan, God has His plans and He has His purposes. And whether you contribute or not will not change them one iota. It's whether or not you participate. And that's why Mordecai tells Esther, maybe your whole life has led to this event and this is your decision. Maybe you Christians, some of you Christians in here, are facing some decisions in your life. And you don't think they're that big. But I'm telling you, there are things that God has prepared you for your whole life. For just this time. And you've got to make a decision. You've got to look it over, and you're then responsible for making the right decision. Maybe you're here and you're not saved. Maybe everything in your life has led to this one moment. And the decision you have to make is, what are you going to do with Christ? What are you going to do? You can make your decision and decide that you're not having none of this. And you can walk away. And God will let you. He's prepared you to now, but it's your decision to make. I would advise you to make the right decision. Amen. Think about all that has been invested in your life to get you here right now.
Amen.
We're going to sing a song. Which one do you want to sing? 149? 249? Okay.
We're going to sing a song, 249. If you have a decision to make, well, I would invite you to come up here or there in your seat, wherever you feel most comfortable, but I would invite you to talk with God and ask Him to make that decision clear, that you want to make the right decision for the right moment in your life. Let's sing 249. Have a decision to make, you want to come up and do that right now? This is your chance. Your whole life has led to this point. Are you not saved? You come up here and talk to me, and I'll get someone to speak with you about salvation. Take a seat while these people pray.